Catherine, I already have an important development to announce. The fact that I was brought 8 cards instead of 7 means that a participant in the qualifying round of the Stanley Cup playoffs has moved into the top 3 overall selection. So we'll see who that is. The number 3 overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the Ottawa Senators.
So, Bill, the Los Angeles Kings and a yet-to-be-determined team are remaining. It's time to reveal who has the number 1 pick in the draft.
The number 1 overall selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to a team yet to be determined, coming from the qualifying round in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Two things, Elliot Friedman. That was perfect. And second, how on brand was that conclusion to the NHL draft lottery phase 1 for the year 2020?
Well, that's what everybody was texting me. Like, this is so 2020. This is 2020.
Yeah.
You know, initially, before I knew I was going on with Ron and Sam in the post show, we were going to do a live reaction podcast to the draft picks.
Right.
And I am really disappointed that didn't happen for one reason. You are the lover of chaos. And I know if someone loved the fact that one of those teams got the pick, it was you.
Oh, it was glorious. Like, honestly, I was just sitting in my office, just me and my dog watching on television. And just honestly, it wasn't like a big, like, you remember when that the video of me with Luke Fox and Steve Dangle when the Maple Leafs get the first overall pick and Dangle pops like the cork out of a champagne bottle? It was nothing like that. It was more of that rich, deep smile and a gentle sort of nod, like, yes, this is setting up the rest of the summer for draft intrigue and also adding another layer of interest and excitement to the play-in round. Like, honestly, if you drew it up, I know, like, going into it, I'm like, yeah, man, I want to see 3 placeholders, boom, 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 real chaos. But really, just having one is like having one in the right spot is that much more profound. And listen, in media, I've always made this thing. I always say, oh yeah, team chaos, team chaos. I'm just team great story. I'm just team interesting story. Like, I don't think everything needs to be over the top and wild and crazy, or else it loses all meaning. Sometimes I just like a really good, nice, safe, boring story that plods along and ends the way that it should end. And then every now and then you get something like we saw Friday night. What did you make of it, Friedge?
Well, first of all, I know one guy who wants to strangle you.
Who's that?
Brian Burke.
Oh, yes. Well, for a lot of
reasons. Because he hates this.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, for
a lot of reasons. First of all, he probably hates working with you.
That's true.
But he hates this. You can tell. And Ron, of course, had to read his text on air in the show.
So good.
Yeah, about how Berkey's like, this is a disgrace. First of all, maybe I'm nuts, but this doesn't bother me as much as it seems to bother a lot of people. Now, I know that there's some people who are upset because it took a lot of explaining to figure out how it was going to work from here.
Yeah.
But in the lottery, there's always teams who move up. And I suggested actually at one point doing the lottery with just the teams that didn't have a chance. And people got mad at me. So if you're not going to agree with that, then you have to have a mechanism for something else.
Not that I think you should base your decisions on how other sports behave or how other sports feel about your sport, but you have a greater context for the world of sports than I do. How are the other sports looking at this result?
You know, I don't know. Like, as we tape this at this part of the podcast at 10:26 Eastern time on Friday night, I have 137 texts on my phone that I haven't had a chance to look at. And I'm sure there's some of them that are thinking, this is a disgrace. The second text I'm probably getting the most of is, I didn't recognize Steve Yzerman. I saw a few of those. I even did a double take when I saw him. I was like, wow, he looks different. But I'm sure there's some people who are looking at it like, this is a disgrace. Berkey is not the only one. I don't get as worked up about it as much as other people do. What I wonder about here, so let's explain the scenarios.
Yes.
If the play-in happens, then the eight losers get a 12.5% chance.
Correct.
If the, for whatever reason, knock on wood, God forbid, because it's bad news, if the play-in doesn't happen, the next eight teams by points percentage get a 12.5% chance. Mm-hmm. And I thought everybody would recognize immediately that that meant the next four non-playoff teams in each conference. Some people took it as the next eight. Like, to me, I thought that was obvious, but maybe I should have explained it a lot more cleaner, because when I finally got off the air and I was doing some of the podcast interviews with you, people didn't figure that out as quickly. And I'm not saying anyone's stupid, because it's a crazy night, but if I could do one thing in the show, if I was the NHL and our production staff, I would have set that up right away. Right after Bill said, okay, we know that there's a team in the top three, mm-hmm. I would have explained those scenarios. But the one thing I'm sitting here, I'm saying, Jeff, is what possible draft lottery winner is going to cause the most hysteria, the biggest conspiracy theories? I only see three or four possible choices.
The Edmonton Oilers.
That's one.
The Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's two.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's three.
And the Montreal Canadiens.
I would say those are the four biggest ones.
Winner, Gagnon.
Like, this is a conspiracy theory world now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even more than ever, because of the COVID-19 times we live in, the world has gone conspiracy crazy.
This is hockey's frozen envelope.
And we should explain where that comes from.
Patrick Ewing basketball.
Yes.
Even I know that. And I didn't cover basketball like you did.
You know, I used to cover the NBA. Chaos lover, which one do you want?
I don't want chaos in this one.
You don't?
No. If I'm choosing, I want Montreal. Because I want Montreal to have the homegrown superstar. Hasn't happened since forever. The last time the draft was in Montreal, I remember Bob Gainey saying Louis LeBlanc. And everyone went crazy. And Louis LeBlanc never made it. Like, I don't, well, that's what I was saying off the top. I don't always want, like, the goofy, boffo, jumping through hoops, circus freak show. I don't always want that. And in this scenario, I just want a nice story. And a nice story would be the Montreal Canadiens getting the first overall pick and getting Alexis Lafreniere. What about you?
I think that's the best story.
I know it's not a very sexy answer, I know, but that's what I want.
To me, in a lot of ways, Winnipeg is probably the team that deserves it, right?
Why is that?
They won the lottery. Their team, spot 12, won the lottery. And they were 12th.
Of all the teams that we saw on Friday night, did you have a preference? Not who deserved it, but were there a couple of teams that you thought, you know what, I'd like to see this team finally get a first overall pick?
This is going to lead to more calls to abolish the lottery, right? I'm against that. That one year where Buffalo and Arizona were blatantly trying to lose and they had that one game late in the season. Mm-hmm. Where the Sabres fans were cheering for the Coyotes or wherever it was. I'm against that. I don't want that. I think it's bad for your league. I don't want the lottery to change. I'm a lottery truther. I believe in it. Mm-hmm. I think Detroit deserved it. Like, to me, this is a reminder. Trevor Linden would always say to me when he was running the Canucks that there was no night that made him sweat more than the lottery. And it was the thing you controlled the least. Mm-hmm. Like, there was one lottery they got hammered in, and the next year they got hammered in it again. And I went to go talk to him, and he was like, we knew this could happen. Like, he was so frustrated, but he's like, you know, this could happen. And I understand, because, you know, when you're a general manager, you're trying to control as much you could control. And the biggest night that determines the fortune of teams, you've got no control over it. But I'll take that over blatant tanking. I think blatant tanking is bad. Now, people might think I'm in the minority on this one. I look at Detroit. I thought it would have been fair for them to win it. I look at Ottawa. I thought it would have been very fair for them to win it. I'm not going to whine or bitch about whoever gets it. Like my Twitter picture up there on the top, the banner says no whining or bitching past this point.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the rules coming in, but I know I'm going to be in the minority of this one. But it is a reminder. It is the craziest thing. Like when I saw that tonight, the first thing I thought of was Trevor Linden, who has always said, like, it's the most important night and it's the one you control the least. And it is true. The lottery is a dangerous mistress.
So a couple of things. One, and I almost got there with LA, although they picked second, and there was a better story with how it unfolded with Team Mystery, Team Placeholder. Going into this, I was saying to myself, you know, the Anaheim Ducks have never selected first overall. The Los Angeles Kings in the modern draft have never selected first overall. They did pick first overall in 1967 before the draft became what we now know as the amateur draft. They do have the name of Rick Pagnuti, who was a defenseman. Actually, he was Mike Milbury's D partner in Rochester. He was a first overall pick. Never played in the NHL. Was part of... Did you know the NHL used to do a reverse draft? I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but did you know they used to do a reverse draft where teams from the Western Hockey League, when it was a pro loop, and the American Hockey League could pick players off NHL rosters? NHL did this from like 65 to 69 or something like that. Anyway, he was picked off by Salt Lake City, so I don't consider that.
I remember reading about this.
Yes. Yeah, they did. This one they had, like, in the 60s, they introduced a number of different types of draft. There was the interleague draft. I think it all started because they needed to get Boston and Chicago some better players fast. And so he started one style of interleague draft, and then they had the reverse draft. Anyway, so I don't consider LA to have ever selected first overall, even though technically they did in 1967, but it wasn't the draft as we know it. So I went into this thinking to myself, it would be good if Anaheim finally gets their first overall pick or Los Angeles gets their first overall pick. Neither happened, but I'm okay with that because I think this is glorious. How do you look at the Carlson trade now?
Well, I mean, it's a good week for Doug Wilson. He goes to the Hall of Fame. He doesn't lose the number one overall pick, right?
Correct.
It's still a trade that worked out better for Ottawa than I think a lot of people did at the time. Mm-hmm. They're still going to get a hell of a player.
Coming up on the program, speaking of Ottawa, you will hear from Pierre Dorion, general manager of the Ottawa Senators. Elliot and I had a chance to talk to him on our Ask 31 show almost immediately after, in conversation with Ron McLean, went off the air. So you're going to hear that, and you'll also hear in a couple of moments here from Rob Blake, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, who Elliot had some great interplay with Luke Robitaille for the entire half hour that Catherine Tappan was hosting the draft show.
I mean, like everyone else, I'm sitting there, I'm watching the broadcast tonight, and when Catherine Tappan is mentioning that LA is going to have a top two pick, you could see they cut to Robitaille and Blake sitting there. And they were turning to each other and they were asking each other something they didn't want the viewers to be able to read their lips.
Yeah.
Like it was one of those things like, are we on camera here? Because I'm trying to ask something and I don't want anyone to know. And it was just funny. Like I was looking at it and I was laughing my head off. And then when we asked Blake about it, he was laughing about it too because he knew exactly what we were referring to.
Before we get to some of our interviews, I did want to get a couple of news and notes in here before we kick off the podcast with Rob Blake and Pierre Dorion. Sam Cosentino joins us towards the end of the podcast as well. We'll drill down on some of the prospects. What's the latest with the NHL and the Players Association and inching closer towards, I believe you referred to it as an MOU, Elliot?
Yeah, I'm a memorandum of understanding. They're not going to be able to get a full CBA done, so they're going to agree to a framework. I think we're going to see a vote next week. I think initially they hope for it to be by June 30th. I don't think that's going to be able to happen because they're going to need 48 to 72 hours to do it. But they're hoping to do it next week. And I think they will get around to do it next week. I think they're working closer on an agreement that caps escrow at 20% for the beginning of the deal. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to keep the salary cap at 81.5 for the next two seasons and 82.5 for the year after. And next year, there's going to be a one-time 10% deferral for the players. And what it will do is it'll help the owners with cash flow and the teams with cash flow, and it'll help the players get that money back. It's not a rollback. They'll get the money back later, mm-hmm. and in theory, at a lower escrow. But that's coming.
Were you surprised to see Artemi Panarin's statement?
Yes, because I know that there's some players who are frustrated with this. Like, normally when players vote on this stuff, it's 900-2, right? There's always two. This is not going to be like that. A lot of guys, and we'll see who's right, but they know this more than I do. They're guessing it's going to pass 60-40. And I know there were some players unhappy about this. I was surprised Panarin, because I just don't know him, that he would have been the guy who would have done that. But the fact that he says that, he's not the only player who feels that way.
Okay. And the latest on hubs.
So we all know Vancouver isn't a hub. I still think one's going to be Vegas. You know, again, I use the caveat, Jeff, of what is true 10 now might not be true 10 minutes from now. I'm hearing a lot of talk about Toronto. Let's see if they close it. And this time, I think the East would stay East and the West would stay West. And by the way, Jeff, I should also say there's a lot of people who think that Lindy Ruff has a really good shot at being the next head coach of the Devils. Now, it's not set, but, you know, ever since we mentioned it this week, I've had a few who reached out to me.
I was going to say, you put it out there on the podcast and on Twitter as well. So there's more fire to that smoke then?
Yes. I had a couple people reach out to me and tell me that they think that not only was Ruff the mystery candidate, but they think he's got a really good shot.
Should we then deduce that means that Tom Fitzgerald has a GM job?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It would seem to me the answer to that question would be yes. But I honestly don't know. I heard they were interviewing some people as recently as last week. So until we get a final announcement, I don't know what to say to that. I really don't. It would seem to indicate yes, but I don't know for sure.
All right. With that, let's kick it off. Welcome to the Draft Lottery edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. We've got a lot to get to, and we thank you for joining us. You're going to hear from Pierre Dorion, the Ottawa Senators general manager. You are going to hear Ottawa, by the way, as you know, selecting third and fifth at the draft. Should they not trade one of those picks? You'll also hear from Sam Cosentino. His draft rankings available right now at sportsnet.ca. But in the meantime, someone that was one pick away from selecting first overall, but they're happy with number two. They've been there before. And they took Drew Doughty. Here is Rob Blake, general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. You know, on lottery day, Elliot, usually you use the analogy of the kid on Christmas morning. Rob Blake opens up his present, and it's number two pick overall. On a scale, Rob, and first of all, thanks for joining us. On a scale of one to, oh man, we just got Drew Doughty, where is LA on their pick? How happy are you on this Friday night?
Well, we sure in a better spot than we started about a couple hours ago. So, no, we're excited about the opportunity for sure. And it's kind of a different situation in the way everything unfolded and a mystery team and all that. But again, like I said, we're excited about the possibilities of moving up like we did.
Okay, so I'm watching the reveal tonight, and Catherine Tappan's hosting it. And she says that, okay, the Kings are in the top three, and the camera cuts to you and Luke Robitaille. And I know this from working in TV. You guys are trying to talk to each other without letting anyone know what you're saying. What's going on there?
Okay, so the scenario there was, so it was the fourth card being turned over, which we originally were slotted, and I think we had a 2% chance. Our lowest percent odds were to finish fourth. So we're working that down, and it may seem slow, to people watching it, but to us, to Luke and I, it's going too fast. We're like, okay, where are we sitting? We're like, what do we got left? And so then it was the fourth card being turned over. And I said, hey, Luke, I said, you know what? I said, we only got a 2% chance at this card. So that means we got a real good chance of getting the top three. And just as I said that, Catherine says, the Kings are in the top three. So Luke's like, we got a real good chance of being in the top three.
Honestly, the cuts to you and Luke might have been the best out of honestly, it was fantastic watching the interplay between you two guys. Now, I know you're not going to betray any secrets, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Do you know who you're taking at number two already?
Yeah, to be honest, no, not at all. You know, much debate will go in. We obviously had a group in the top few picks there that we have debated internally based off of where we're sitting at fourth. We've run some dry runs and did some things there, but I can honestly say we wouldn't be able to make that decision currently right now.
Someone sent me a note tonight. Your last three picks have been centers, Turcotte, Kupari, and Vilardi.
Right.
And if you look at just the way this is shaped up after Lafreniere, the next two guys are centers. Like, does that matter to you, Rob? Like, do you care?
No, I mean, so you mentioned those three. We'll take four centers like that. You know, no, we firmly believe you build through the middle, you build the D and the goaltender, and currently where we're positioned, we've drafted some centermen, we've acquired some centermen, but that will all play out as it goes, but that doesn't affect kind of what we're looking at.
The one thing that we've noticed, again, we're going to try to get you to play your hand here a little bit. The one thing that we've noticed with the Los Angeles Kings in the past few seasons, as you go through this, you know, rebuild of the organization, is not only is this team trying to get younger and more skilled, but specifically it looks as if this team is trying to get faster, as if the organization said, listen, what won the Stanley Cups isn't working now in the NHL. We need to get quicker. If you have a decision to make between size and speed of equal players, where will you lean?
Well, I think when you're up in that level, I'm not sure that one of those, the size or the speed, drops off enough to make a difference. You know, I think when you look at our rebuild, I think what's come into play here is that the realization that we are currently in the rebuild. A year ago, there was a transition. We were getting into it. We still had to get through this past deadline. And now it's clear that we're in this position and we're going forward with that. You surround yourself with some veterans that have won, and now you're adding that youth. But with that youth and the higher picks, the speed and the skill comes with those. And we've been able to acquire some of them in the last couple of years.
You know, Rob, Luke Robitaille, the nickname Lucky Luke, did you make sure you had him next to you tonight for that particular reason?
Well, after last year's, Luke went there, and I don't know, we went from 2 to 5.
That's true. So, good point. I forgot about that.
So I'm like, Lucky, are you allowed to come to this tonight? No. I'm glad that Luke was in, we were able to get through whatever the protocol we had to do to get in here and do it together, because we did have some of those conversations between the awkward moments when you're trying to figure out exactly where you stand on the different odds.
It's such a weird time right now, Rob, for a lot of reasons. You know that you've got the number two overall pick, and normally, you would know who that player is by now. We'd be drafting that player, just last week.
Right.
Now you've got to wait another few months. Like, this is just, how do you guys prepare from here? How do you guys go from here in this odd time of life?
Well, I think it narrows the band of players. Like, we were one of the teams, we could go from 1 through 7. Once they finalized the format of the draft lottery, where we were sitting at fourth, we could go from 1 through 7. So that there's a big range of players. And, and you do your prep and you do your interviews. Now you take it to that second stage, and now you narrow down. Now there's a very narrow, selection of players, and now you got to dig in and do your homework there. But it also sets up the second round, the third round, the fourth round, and so on. So, you know, lots of work to do there. And then the other scenario is whenever the draft will happen, will other leagues be up and playing? Will you get another look at some of the top picks playing, you know, 4 or 5 months after the season pause? So there's a huge growth in maturity and growth in these players over that time. So some of those things are unknown right now, but it sure does narrow down the players that you will be talking to in your discussions going forward.
So here's my question based on that. If we all believe there's a number one, and that's Lafreniere, how many players in the Kings' eyes are in the next tier?
I would say we're probably really going to work hard on about four.
Four. Okay.
It depends on, you know, picking at the second pick here. There's some guys that we got to have some serious discussions on going forward there.
How many of these top prospects, like the real high-end players, have you seen yourself?
Out of the top first round, I don't know the exact number. I got to see quite a few. What I kind of do is the first half of the season, I stay with a big club for the most part. And then the second half, unfortunately, kind of unfolds the season. And you know that you're, okay, now we're projected to be picking at this such and such area. So now you start to get a number that you can go and see. You know, but I've done that the past couple years. I don't know if that's the formula I'm ever going to end up with exactly when I do this for a little while, but I've seen to do that. And a lot of it's based off of kind of where our team was here. And, you know, this year with a new coach and the turnover and the type of things, I just felt the imperative to be around the team until at least past Christmas. And then we go out. The other fact that comes into there, Mark Iannetti has run our amateur for a number of years. So I have a real good relationship and a real good understanding about how he does things, and when he does his lists and the timing of the lists, and then when he brings it to me to get to a certain area and circled players that we need to go see. So, you know, a lot of that goes into play on deciding when and how we go out to see these prospects.
You know, Rob, just out of remote curiosity, and a lot of reaction to the way the draft unfolded and how the number one team is going to go. Yeah. Do you have any problem with it? Like, you know, you've seen everything in your career. Do you have a problem at all here?
Yeah. No, I mean, again, that's the way it's going to unfold. So you let it happen. And, you know, we were discussing in the back, is this what they wanted? Is this the worst case scenario? Listen, it adds so much more drama. You can see a whole nother phase and another group of teams coming in there. So we understood that process. You know, it was interesting because since the pause, there were so many different scenarios, let alone the play-in or the playoff structure. There was also talk about how the draft lottery, how the draft. And so you play all these different scenarios, but finally you come up with one. And you know, this is the outcome. This can happen. So you're a little more prepared for it.
I'm curious about the LA market for a young prospect. How much do you take into account? I mean, just, you know, Elliot and I, you know, work out of Toronto, and it takes a very, as you well know, Rob, a unique type of player to be able to survive and thrive in that environment. What does it take to survive and thrive in Los Angeles? What kind of player is successful there?
It is different. It's different because the everyday drive outside of the arena per se isn't there. Not like it is in a Toronto or Montreal or Edmonton, Calgary, whatever, you know, Eastern type team there. So, you know, I learned a lot when Dean was here about creating a type of culture, a type of importance, so that when you walk through the dressing room or walk into that room every day, it's the exact same feel as it would be in an Eastern city that's had the hockey bred into them from day one. So that's kind of the way that we breathe it. We have different obstacles because of the outside pressures on different days and getting away and things. Players tend to really like to be able to step outside the dressing room and get away from things for a day or two. But we have to create a culture inside there so that the next minute they walk back in that room for practice or not, that pressure and all that anticipation of playing is built in there again. So it's a little unique, but I've been here long enough, and I think I've been fortunate that I've not only experiencing here the GM, assistant GM or whatever, but as a player too. So I've seen the whole thing, and then I was able to go to another market like Colorado where it was a lot different.
I have a non-draft question for you. Rob, I've heard some rumblings that there could be some of the teams that don't make the playoffs maybe getting a chance to play some games earlier in the fall. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of different scenarios. We haven't had direction one way or the other. I mean, I think obviously their focus is getting the stage three and then the play-in stage four in process and that. But there'll be discussions going forward on how it's handled development-wise, what type of camps and different structures, because, you know, the players have been off for a long time, and the seven teams that did not qualify for the play-in is a much extended period of time, and you want to be able to get some touches with your prospects, but not only now, your prospects, the current players also. Mm-hmm. So there'll be much discussion going in different scenarios. We haven't had that direction, but we obviously know they're very focused on some other things first here to get set up.
Okay, and my final question for you is, if you had $50, uh-huh, and unless you invested really poorly, I'm betting you have $50, who would you bet on to win the Stanley Cup this year?
Jeez. Oh, boy. I don't know. It's not a normal.
No, it's normal weird. Guy. Like, people ask me this question. I'm like, I have no idea.
Well, there's two different scenarios. So is it a young team who has all this energy that comes back really quick, or is it the veteran team that knows how to prepare? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't know. It'll unfold. But listen, I think at the end of the day, what I've been able to see between the Players Association and the NHL has been terrific the last few months, because they're actually working together, because they both understand that they want to get hockey back and people want to see sports, and you guys know, you're in that market there. You know how important it is. So everybody's been on the same page that it's so important health wise first, but to be able to get the sport back. And listen, we're all excited to see some kind of playoff hockey, and you know, whether it's fans or no fans or whatever, you understand that the guys, when they get into that setting, they're gonna compete.
All right, and then my final one will be a non-lottery question as well. I want to ask you about colleagues, and specifically blue liners turned managers. We just saw two defensemen go into the Hockey Hall of Fame, in Doug Wilson and Kevin Lowe. Mm-hmm. You're a Hockey Hall of Famer yourself. We talked about you last week on the podcast, as a matter of fact. Do you have a thought on these two? I mean, they're colleagues in that they're both managers and also played the same position that you did in the NHL.
Well, first and foremost, the defensemen are the smartest guys on the ice, so they should make good general managers and be able to make all those decisions and things. No, they're terrific. You know, I've never really known Kevin too much away from playing him and watching his career unfold, and terrific player and all the things that he brings to the hockey game. You know, I was fortunate with Doug Wilson. I got to play in San Jose at the end of my career under him and really got to know him. And I use him quite a bit in my current role when I have questions and when I have different things that come up in the general manager role. These guys are really open to openly discussing things with you. You know, there's a competitive advantage and everybody knows it, but they're also very open, and Doug's been terrific with me on all aspects. So great for them, great for Kenny Holland and Jerome. You know, Jerome finished had part of his career here at the end in LA, and was a terrific role model for such a short period of time. But I remember I took over right after that, and I remember having a meeting, said, some of you guys in here don't understand how fortunate you are to play with a player like him. So you know, great job by all these guys. A little different format with everything that unfolded, but hats off to all them.
Blue liners are the smartest, especially the right shot D's. Is that right, Rob?
Yes, by far. Not even close.
Thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on getting pick number two.
All right, guys. Thanks.
We thank Rob Blake for dropping by the podcast today. From one GM to another, Rob Blake and the Los Angeles Kings select second, and then it'll be up to Pierre Dorion, who has two picks in the top five, number three and number five. Here's the Ottawa Senators general manager with me and Elliot. This was on our Ask 31 show on YouTube, moments after the In Conversation with Ron McLean show wrapped up. Here's the Ottawa Senators GM on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. right away, the first question, is there a sense of relief now that this is all over? I mean, so much has been built up to this day, and now that the order has been determined, still a question mark number one, as we all know. How do you feel right now?
Great. I think our fans and the organization has been anticipating this day, knowing where we would pick. There was a bit of a delay to it, and I'll be with everything going on in the world, but now we know we picked 3 and 5, and if you would have said at the start of the year that you're picking 3 and 5, you would have said, well, it's not the greatest year for the Ottawa Senators. But at the same time, we know that we're making the right steps in our rebuild.
You know, Pierre, first of all, there's a lot of reaction tonight about the way the lottery unfolded and the fact that one of the play-in teams is going to be picking first. Do you have a huge problem with this?
No, not at all. We knew that if the scenario would have been like the usual self, it would have been the same scenario. One of the teams that missed the playoffs, and, you know, it's a different world. I like the scenario. I will be very forthright that when this plan came out, I was all for it. It set things more in place. And, you know, it could be a good team, a team that, you know, probably couldn't have been there. But that's the way that they set it up. And no objections from the Ottawa Senators.
The fact that you're selecting, and you have multiple picks, as we know, in the first round, specifically number 3 and number 5, does that change in any way how you approach those picks? I mean, there's two formulas, right? We're picking for position or we're picking best player available. Does anything change from your scouting book now?
No, but I think you have to look at, when you're picking that early in a draft, you have to look at the immediate impact that some players can have. At the end of the day, it's what those players do for you through their career, you know, if they play for you for your whole career. But at the same time, you have to look at their short-term impact, medium-term impact, and what they're going to be as NHL players in the long-term impact. And some players in the top five, even though you're picking in the top five, can develop a bit later, but others can have an impact right away. So obviously, with our chief scout, Trent Mann, who's, I can't say enough good things about, he's one of the best in the business. I have a scouting background, and we have a special chief scout in Trent Mann. We're going to sit down together with our group of scouts, and, you know, we've been through multiple scenarios. We knew that we could end up picking 5 and 6, and for us, we feel that we're going to get a really good player that could play for us as early as next year's 3, and it could also happen in the case of 5.
You know, Pierre, you gave a really, when we were on with Ron in the post show, you gave a really good breakdown of some of the players, and I was thinking when you were talking about it, Doug McLean would always talk about the year that Anze Kopitar was available. And he's like, this is a guy from Slovenia. And he was nervous about staking his reputation on drafting a guy from Slovenia. And here we've got a guy in Stutzel. And there would be a time, I bet you people would talk about Germany and say the exact same thing. Like, am I going to take a German guy second or third overall? Now, the way the world's changed in 15 years, since you started scouting yourself and your family's history of scouting, is there less fear about players from non-traditional hockey hotbeds?
Oh, I think if you look at just the players that have come out of Germany in the last few years, you look at a player like Dreisaitl, who's one of the best players in the league. I know he played his junior in Prince Albert, but he still came from there. You look at Morris Seider, who last year that the Red Wings took in the, I think it's 6th overall. Germany's is an up-and-coming country as far as developing hockey players, and having spent quite a bit of time in Germany this year, that league is a very good league. So there's no, hockey players are hockey players, wherever they come from. In this day and age, the way they train, I think with video and the world, the way the world is, no qualms about taking anywhere from where they're from.
All right. Sorry, Jeff, one quick question.
Yeah.
German beer or Riesling?
German beer.
Okay, just checking.
Coors Light is still my favorite beer.
We know we're not going to get you to show your hand as it relates to who you're looking at for 3 or for 5. So I'm going to have to go at you more philosophically here, Pierre. There are some that say you should never draft a goaltender in the first round. Is Pierre Dorion one of those people?
You take the player that you feel will help you most win in a span of 3 to 7 years.
Good answer. We have a question here. Sean R., would you consider trading out of either of those spots?
It would be very difficult to do something like that. I think we have a plan in place here. We always knew that we were going to have, you know, as the year went on, we always knew we'd have 2 fairly high picks. We've put a lot of resources in taking those 2 players. And with the depth of the top 10, I would say, I personally think from scouting a lot this year, and I know Trent Mann, our chief scout, and our scouts, and the many conversations we've had, that we feel that there's 15 to 18 to 20 players that are going to be really good NHL players this year. It would be very difficult for us to do that. It would have to be a special player coming our way to do that scenario. But you never say never to those type of scenarios. I think it's our job to listen as an organization, but I would be very surprised if we moved out of 3 and 5.
Okay. If I could ask you this then, maybe I think a lot of people assume that Lafreniere would go first. Without giving us names, can you tell us, give us an idea, Pierre, of the next tier? How many players, you don't have to name them, but how many players do you think are in that next tier after Lafreniere?
I would probably have to tell you there's two in the next tier, and then there's probably another in the next tier from probably 4 to 12 is probably the next tier, and then 12 to 18 to 20 is, but they're all going to be good players.
Yeah, so that's good.
And in that third tier that you talk about, I mean, everyone's list will look wildly different. Mm-hmm. We suspect, does that, you know, going back to the question about trading, does that make it a little easier? We know number three is going to be a lot. Like, to get number three from Ottawa is going to be a tough sell. But number five, considering the player that you want might be still be available at 6, 7, or 8, does that make it easier for you?
We have a lot of picks. So for us, it's always drafting quality over quantity. But in this year's draft, we feel we have the best of both worlds. We're going to have quality and quantity with having 9 picks in the first 3 rounds. We feel that at this point in time, if we can add as many quality pieces, I think it really sets us up for a lot of future success.
Your owner released a statement calling this a major step forward in the organization. It sounds like you're echoing those sentiments as well.
Yeah, it was great. We were all here at CTC. Mr. Melnick was here. DJ drove in. He wanted to be part of this. Our assistant GM, Peter McTavish, was here. And so was our new president of business operations, Anthony LeBlanc. And we were all united. We were all respecting social distancing, some at times talking with our masks, and we couldn't really hear each other. But it was a very eventful night for the Ottawa Senators, and I think a night that's going to really set us in the right path for a lot of success moving forward.
And was DJ selling you on all the OHL kids? I know it's the sort of return to the first round for the Ontario League.
He was good. He knows some of them, obviously. He was asking, can 3 and 5 play next year? Was probably the more obvious question from DJ.
We're seeing more and more. So the number one pick always sort of steps into the NHL. Now a couple of picks step in, and sometimes 3, 4, 5 players jump right in into the NHL. Just off the top of your mind, when you look at the list of potential first rounders, how many do you think can step right in?
Well, Jeff, not that I don't want to answer the question. When are we going to start? What happens here, Jeff, is that we're not allowed to physically test them. A lot of it is how physically strong these players are at 18, 19 years old. And also, we don't get to spend time with them as much as we want to. At times, it's also the mental aspect. Can they handle the adversity of, for the first time in their life, not playing on a first line? Playing on a third and fourth line and developing the way that they should be developing, facing adversity for the first time. It's way different playing against a 19-year-old defenseman and the next night going out and facing Shea Weber. It's something that we have to gauge it for ourselves, and we respect whatever the rules are from the NHL, but hopefully by the time the draft comes, we get the chance to do some kind of physical testing, do some kind of spending time with every player. Zoom interviews are great, and we've had over 70, and I've missed maybe 4 or 5 just because of other work. But at the same time, even though you get, some Zoom interviews have gone 45 minutes for us, and you're only allowed a 15 to 20 minute slot time and when we have the regular combines, but it's still not the same as sitting in the room with someone.
Sure. Elliot, last question to you.
Yeah, and then we'll give it to Andrew from YouTube. Here you go, Pierre. You'll love this one. If you could trade 3 and 5 for 1, would you?
No comment.
Perfect. Listen, wonderful night for the Ottawa Senators. Congratulations on picks number 3 and 5. Thanks so much for dropping by today. I know you have a lot of media commitments. We appreciate you parking some time with us tonight. Thanks, Peter.
Jeff, Elliot, it's a pleasure.
That's Pierre Dorion, Ottawa Senators general manager. They will select third and fifth at the NHL draft in 2020, whenever that is. Quick break. We're back with Sam Cosentino, our lead draft analyst at Sportsnet on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Elliot, when we need prospect information, we go to one source, and that is Sam Cosentino. His list up right now at sportsnet.ca, our lead draft analyst, as we like to say, and close observer of all things prospect and the CHL as well. Sam, kind of been asking this of everybody this evening. Just before we get into the players and where they rank and where they slot, give us your thoughts on what we just saw, what we just witnessed on Friday night with team placeholder coming in at number one.
My thoughts? You know what? It's going to give a lot of people like ourselves a lot to talk about for a long time. I feel bad for Alexis Lafreniere because he's been robbed of the opportunity to get up on stage in Montreal in front of friends and family and, you know, shake Gary Bettman's hand and shake the general manager's hand of the team that would have selected him. So this is just prolongs that wait. Having said all that, though, there's endless possibilities. I mean, could he play with Sidney Crosby? Could he end up playing in Montreal, which would be a really cool story in and of itself? So although he does have to wait, maybe the opportunity to play at home is something that's worth waiting for.
You know, Sam, we had Pierre Dorion on Ask 31 and heard him here as well on the 31 Thoughts podcast. And Ottawa selects third and fifth, and everything in life is based on, you know, expectations. And, you know, I'm sure going into Friday night, Ottawa Senators fans had dreams of, you know, getting the first round pick. I don't want to call it a failure because it's a lottery. How good are these picks still for the Ottawa Senators, or is this a huge loss for the team?
I don't think it's a huge loss. I mean, Lafreniere would have provided that extra value of the off ice and Gatineau being across the river, you know, with a French speaking community there would have been, you know, unbelievable for the franchise. Having said that, their prospect pool right now is absolutely stacked. So now in the position of 3 and 5, they have the ability to address the two most coveted positions. Likely with the 3 pick, I think Byfield's the guy that they take there, if not Stützle, both of them projected center. And then with the 5th pick, they're probably going to be able to get the first defenseman off the board. Is that going to be Jamie Drysdale or Jake Sanderson? That race wasn't close in the middle of the year, but in the second half, the gap between those two tightened. So now you can address center ice with size with Byfield, and now you can address who you think is the best defenseman and continue to add stock to what is already a deep talent pool for the Ottawa Senators. So they should be extremely happy sitting in that position because it almost forces their hand into addressing a centerman and a defenseman.
You know, one of the things I was listening to was Dorion, and we heard it earlier in the podcast, Sam, and he talks about tiers, and he kind of talks about there's the guy at the top, then there's a couple, and then there's sort of like 4 to 12. So separate guys for us here. Like if you were in Dorion's shoes, Lafreniere is the first tier. Who's in the next tier?
Well, Tim Stützle, Quentin Byfield are in that tier. What's going to mess things up? And I think Detroit picks Cole Perfetti at 4. So does it mess it up? Is it a bit of a reach? You know, you can make that decision for yourself. I just think the ties between Detroit and Perfetti are too much to ignore. So let's just assume that they go down that road. Now you're looking at Ottawa at 3 and 5. You know, they've had a lot of success in Sweden. You know, when you look back at Carlson and when you look back at Alfredsson. So Lucas Raymond is a player that fits squarely in that group at number 5. Marco Rossi is a guy who led the Ontario Hockey League in scoring, who played in Ottawa's backyard. He's a potential guy there. Alexander Holtz, another Swede. But when I look at the tiers, I look at 1 and then I look at the next 10 or 11 players. So who am I to discount or discredit what Pierre Dorion says? In my personal opinion, I think you're pretty good till 10 for sure, and maybe even as far as 12. And I do think there's going to be a lot of different players that positions are jumbled. I think Jake Sanderson is a guy who I think may even get into that top 5. I think Cole Perfetti, you know, is a guy that I would have had around 7 or 8 that I think now goes to Detroit at 4. So things are going to get shifted around just a little bit. And then that remaining group of players that I talked about is very much in the mix. Stützle, Raymond, Holtz, Now you got Drysdale, Sanderson, Perfetti, Rossi. Jack Quinn is a guy who also played in Ottawa who may see a significant rise inside the top 10. So I think the possibilities really are endless there, and Ottawa is perfectly placed. But that next group of players, for whatever team takes them, the fans of that of those teams should be really happy about it.
You know, we've talked a lot this season about the German, but what about the Austrian? And you just mentioned his name, Marco Rossi of the Ottawa 67s. Every time I saw that team play, like, that was a dynamite team. Like, that's a real disappointment for Ottawa. This was, you know, potentially a Memorial Cup year. I think we're all waiting for that big showdown, Peterborough Petes and Ottawa 67s. Peterborough seemed to be the only team that could handle them. That was going to be a dynamite series should we have gotten there. But what do you make of Marco Rossi?
I just love this guy. And I compare him a little bit to Braden Point. He's a centerman. He's a little bit smaller. He thinks the game extremely well. He's one of those players who's not afraid to go to the dirty areas. He's defensively responsible. And I always tend to speak to the coach. And you always have to take that with a grain of salt, but, because the coach is just going to typically promote their player. But even going back to last year, I remember sitting in London in the coach's office talking to Andre Tournier, and he said, I'm telling you right now, this guy's a top five pick. So he comes along the lines of Nico Hischier. In fact, that's why Rossi ended up coming over to North America. He had contacted Hischier. Hischier had played for Andre Tournier for the 1 year he was in Halifax. And based on that recommendation, in part, he made his way to Ottawa so he could play under the very same coach. But when it comes to Rossi, low center of gravity, works extremely hard. Andre Tournier said, in practice, he's an animal. He takes no prisoners in practice. He elevates the entire team with those great practice habits. And then all the things that he can do on the ice. You know, the last thing I'd say about Rossi, he's extremely driven. I mean, Austrian hockey wasn't good enough for him to play at a young age. So he and his dad had to drive into Switzerland to be able to play there with slightly better competition. You're talking about hours upon hours in the car. You're talking about his dad losing his job on a couple of occasions. So it's been an entirely family commitment for a player who is driven and who, because of his size, might end up slipping a little further than what I had originally had him at five. But you're going to get a really, really good player there and someone I like in the Braden Point.
Guy who takes no prisoners. That sounds like you in the pizza line there, Sammy.
Yeah, or you and your beard.
So, like, let's go through it. Like, let's go through your list. So people can check it on the website at sportsnet.ca. But while you're here, take us through it. Like, if you're the Sammy draft, take us through, well, we know seven teams. Take us through your top seven.
Yeah, okay. So I'm working on that currently. And so as I would, and it might change slightly from when I sit down and write it and start to think about it and go through stuff. But Lafreniere to the placeholder, EFGHIJKLMNOP, whoever, okay? Mm-hmm. Stützle goes second to LA. Then I think you look at Byfield at third. I think you look at Perfetti as about as much a lock as Lafreniere, in my opinion, at four. You go back to Ottawa at five. I think they address in a defenseman. And this is where I'm going to have a lot of consternation. Right now, I'm going to say Drysdale. By the time it goes to print, it might end up being Sanderson. Let's go to Anaheim at six. So if I put Drysdale with Ottawa right now, six Anaheim, I think, goes the way of Sanderson. Then you get into New Jersey. I think Rossi is a guy who fits well there. And then you get to Buffalo, and I think Lucas Raymond is a guy who gets into that mix. Now, he's another guy that I'm having some consternation about in terms of changing and moving up and down. But that's, first glance, that's how I see it. Lafreniere, Stützle, Byfield, Perfetti, Drysdale, Sanderson, Rossi, Raymond.
I want to drill down on a couple more of these kids, and we'll continue this theme that Elliot started on here of walk us through your list and walk us through the draft. I know you're not necessarily the biggest fan of taking the goalie in the first round. But when you have someone like Yaroslav Askarov, it does give you cause for pause. How high can this guy go?
He's going. He's going for sure. I have him outside of 10 because I just feel that that group of 10 players with two defensemen and eight forwards in that group is just too good to pass on to wait for the goalie. Now, anywhere past 10, then it becomes a viable option. And the path that I look, the critical path that I like to look at is that of Tampa Bay, Vasilevsky. Give him some time, let him mature, stay another year in Russia, come on over, play in the American Hockey League, get your chops. Then I look at Washington, Samsonov, same thing. They were very well positioned with Braden Holtby in goal, so they knew they didn't have to rush him. They let him play in the KHL another year. Then they brought him over, American Hockey League, and now look what Samsonov's doing this year in Washington. Really good things as a backup, to the point now where maybe you can look past Braden Holtby for the next contract. Or maybe he becomes a piece that you can move, or maybe you kind of move on from it. So I think it's more suited to a team that wants to take that critical path where they're pretty good in goal right now, but would really want to continue that moving forward and allowing this guy 3-4 years before he's able to come over and play in the National Hockey League.
You know, Sam, we talked a lot last year about how the Vancouver draft was, I mean, that was all about the U.S. development program. Like, that was spectacular, all the players they sent to the first round on the Friday night in Vancouver. Safe to say that this year is the return of the CHL?
No question about it. And it's three leagues deep. I mean, we saw an emergence of a couple of Western Hockey League players, Seth Jarvis being one of them, Ridley Gregg being one of them. Braden Schneider was already in that mix. So too was Connor Zeri. But the emergence of those other two players really helped out. And when you look at NHL Central Scouting, Ozzie Weisblatt of Prince Albert has also moved up considerably. Now let's flip it back and go to the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Of course, you have Lafreniere at the top of that list there. But as you move down, Dawson Mercer, unbelievable. Hendrix LaPierre, bit of a wild card because of the neck issues that he suffered. Justin Barron is a guy who, again, missed a lot of time because of injury. Jeremy Poirier, the defenseman. Maverick Bourque is another guy who's highly thought of. Now we'll flip over to the Ontario Hockey League, and it starts there with Quinton Byfield and Jamie Drysdale being the top two guys there. Then you go Perfetti, Rossi, Quinn, so on and so forth. I forgot about Caden Gooley for the Western Hockey League. So definitely, definitely a banner year for the Canadian Hockey League. Too bad they're not going to get the big stage to be able to show it all off. But I think there's really impactful players right down through the bottom of this list that are going to come from the Canadian Hockey League.
I got to tell you, Sam, I'm just still in shock about the craziness of this night. We have to talk about this a little bit because, you know, Sam and I were doing that post show with Ron, you know, so Lafreniere is supposed to come on and all of a sudden he doesn't know where the heck he's going. So he doesn't want to say anything. And Ron's like, okay, what happens if the season doesn't play? So we're scrambling to get the answer to that question.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was crazy there for a couple minutes. It absolutely was.
Yeah, I got to say, I pooped my weed drawers there for a sec because I'm looking around, I'm saying, all right, I got 3 or 4 questions for Lafreniere. This thing's going to be smooth as pie. I haven't done live TV in so long. And then you get thrown that curveball. But that's what it's all about. And it's crazy to think of the endless number of possibilities for that young man. I feel bad because he has to wait, but the wait might be worth it. And like I say, it's probably good for the league to have all that talk. You're going to have your dissenters. Brian Burke being one of them, saying this is a sham, this is a hoax, and whatever else. And he very rarely goes against the league, but you're still going to have that camp, and that camp is going to engage in discussion just as much as the camp who thinks it's pretty cool.
You know what? I think I would like it better if you called it a Travis Shamockery, like the old beer. But you know what? Like, here's the thing I'll say to this, and I said it earlier in the podcast too. There's always teams who are in the lottery in those spots.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And I know that this is unusual and this is screwed up. To me, it's very 2020.
Yes.
It's the year, right? Like, if there's ever a point where this was going to happen, it was going to be in 2020. And everybody agreed to this, right? This is the way that it was going to happen. I don't think anybody wanted this.
No, I don't think so either. But with it being 2020, we were bound to see one of the teams.
Yeah.
One of the placeholders for sure.
Yeah.
Let's drill down a little bit more on Alexi Lafreniere. Because you guys talked to Ron about him on the Friday night In Conversation show. And Ron talked about, you know, positions and can he be a center? And, you know, generally it's the centers and the defensemen that go first overall. Give us a breakdown, Sammy, from what you've seen, and you've covered him for a long time. What do you see when you see Alexi Lafreniere? And does, like, I liked Elliot's point with Ron that position now more so than ever doesn't really matter. We have playmaking wingers as much as we have playmaking centers, but give us a skill set for Alexi Lafreniere.
Well, Freach copied that answer for me, first of all.
Greatness borrows, genius steals.
But let's start with the size. Real typical hockey size, 6'1", 190, 195 pounds. And he's added layers. As I've watched him over 3 years, I mean, you come into the league and, oh, yeah, he's a sniper. So 42 goals, yeah, unbelievable. And then you go into your next year, you win the CHL Player of the Year. You come back and you've added that layer of physicality to your game. So we've seen the goal scoring. We've seen the playmaking. Now we've added that physicality to his skill set this year, or at least something that emerged throughout the course of this year, most likely because it was his third year in the league and he's a little bit stronger and a little bit faster and so on and so forth. So when I look at this player, I'm not thinking of the Nathan MacKinnon speed. I'm not thinking of the puck handling ability at high speed like Connor McDavid. I'm not thinking about the hands of Patrick Kane, but I'm thinking about a little bit from each of those guys. And so Patrick Kane is his favorite player because the vision is something that really sticks out when it comes to Lafreniere's game. He makes plays that are completely unexpected. He's really good in all three zones. When he's committed to working on the defensive side and neutral ice, he's really good there. You know, you ask his coach, Serge Beausoleil, and he wasn't always committed to that all the time. But that's something that's definitely in his repertoire. He shoots it hard, heavy, accurately, really super quick release. And his ability to read the play and his vision is something that really sticks out. Now, I'm looking at a guy where skating is not an issue whatsoever. I'm looking at a guy who has a lot of those little pieces from those super high-end skilled guys, but with that added layer of physicality that maybe they don't have. And I think that's what puts him over the top and makes him the number one guy.
Quinton Byfield's almost a full year younger than Alexis Lafreniere. How much do you take into account when you measure the two against each other, and you have for a couple of years now, Sam? How much do you take that into account?
It's huge. It's huge for me. And I'll use Lafreniere as the example. You go back to his first World Junior experience, it did not go well. You know, he was called out. His playing time was limited. But aren't we saying the same thing about Quinton Byfield and his experience this year? I don't think he touched the ice in the final game. And he started out at camp, and I went to watch him at camp here in Oakville. I mean, he was a guy that you thought was going to instantly be in the top six. Now, things played themselves out. The older players emerged, and all of a sudden, we're talking about a guy who ended up not playing a ton and more towards the back end, which is where Lafreniere was. That one extra year of playing in the league, that one extra year of being able to work out, it's huge. This guy's 6'4", 215. I mean, what if he comes back when the CHL starts to play again at 6'5", 220, 225? The one thing I'll say about his game, he plays with a short stick, and that takes away from some of his being 6'4". I'd like to see him play with increased length on the stick because it's just going to make him so much more effective, and it's going to make him more of a menacing figure out there on the ice. Now, he likes that in tight game. His hands are really good. He feels comfortable with that. I don't think he's going to be able to play that way in the National Hockey League, and so that's something that maybe as early as next year he adds to his repertoire when you talk about adding layers to his game. But that 10 months makes a huge difference. Essentially, it's another year in the Canadian Hockey League. And think of the jump that Lafreniere made from last year to this year. I think Byfield's due for something similar.
And finish up by getting your focus on Tim Stützle of Mannheim. Last year was Moritz Seider, a little bit of a off-the-board pick at that spot by the Detroit Red Wings. But make no mistake about it, this guy could go as high as number two. The one thing about him specifically that scouts rave about is the speed. This guy flies.
Yeah, no question. And he can handle it at high speeds. He's really light on his skates. He's an excellent playmaker. You talk to Todd Alushko, who's very well known to us over at Sportsnet and works with Mannheim. And he says that he was almost like he was too nice a guy and didn't want to pass the puck. So that's why he only ended up with 7 goals. I mean, they were talking a little bit about that on Tim and Sid. He would much rather have deferred to his older, more experienced teammates. But I spoke to Mark Kadek, who played in the Ontario Hockey League going back to when I first started calling games. He's a teammate of his, and he couldn't say enough things about this guy's work ethic. He's like, man, I get up, I go to the rink early. This little bugger's here. He's ahead of me. And when I'm leaving, I'll go check the rink, and he's out there doing more stuff. So that work ethic, that competitiveness, that quiet confidence, all part of the intangibles that he brings to the table. But when you look at the playmaking ability and the ability to handle the puck at high speeds on the ice, that's what really impresses you. And I think, Jeffy, the last thing that I'll talk about, he had the opportunity to play center at the World Juniors. So getting back to his peer group, And I think there's going to be a lot of teams that project him being a center. And of course, as you know, that adds tremendous value to his draft stock.
The new Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, very well put there. He won't play as heavy as Pierre-Luc Dubois. You know, some of the comparisons have been made to Mitch Marner in terms of his ability to pass the puck, to do it at high speeds, to do sort of the unexpected thing. Mm-hmm. But he looks to me more like, I see a little bit of Patrick Kane in him in terms of the hands and the playmaking ability there. So he's going to be an interesting guy to watch. But I feel pretty strongly that he's going to end up going to LA at two.
Sammy, you're the best. Thanks as always for doing this. We'll have you on plenty as the draft approaches, whenever that is. Yeah. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
And that's Sam Cosentino, lead draft analyst at Sportsnet. His latest rankings available at sportsnet.ca. And whenever the draft is, Elliot, you can be sure that you must read what Sam's writing at sportsnet.ca and follow him. He's on Instagram, by the way. He's still resistant to join Twitter, Elliot, but he's all over Instagram, so you can follow Sammy there. Elliot, before we wrap up here for a couple of weeks, just put a final bow around this one. I mean, Friday night, you've talked about this before, how lottery day, lottery night, just the draft lottery in general, is a big deal for franchises and one of the most important events of the year on the NHL schedule.
Nothing determines your future more than this. Nothing determines your future more than the lottery.
Bigger than trade deadline, bigger than free agent day.
100%. 100%. Look at this on Friday night. Look how many teams' futures just got totally changed.
Yep.
Detroit's, Ottawa's, LA's,
Edmonton's.
I mean, God only knows where we're going here with the number one overall pick. All of a sudden, there are 16 more teams looking at this and going, As we're taping this right now, I got to read you this tweet I got. I'm not going to tell you who it's from.
Okay.
What a bleeping disaster this draft lottery turned into. You know, that's...
I disagree. I think this is great. We have a storyline, a new storyline that's going to run.
The night after the play-in round's over, it's going to be a huge television audience.
Totally. For the number one overall pick? Are you kidding? This is great. This is a gift. Like, this is a gift that has been handed to you. Are you grown up enough to take it? Please, don't get squirrely about this. This is a gift that has been handed over. It's been placed on the table. Are you grown up enough to pick it up? Because it's a gift.
I am really curious to see where this goes. Like, at the beginning of this podcast, I talked about how it doesn't bother me that much.
Stop reading your texts.
As I sit here and read my texts, I am wondering what the legacy of the 2020 draft lottery is going to be.
It's going to be like the rest of this year, the rest of this season. It, like we said off the top, this is a completely on-brand finale for the lottery. This is perfect. This has been a year that's been thrown into chaos. All of our lives have been turned upside down. Why shouldn't the lottery? We've been preparing for this for how many months now, as our lives are all different, every single one of us. We've been preparing for this. Let's not pretend that we haven't. This is the 2020 ending. It's perfect.
I think we should end the pod on that. Because I like it.
Sure.
But before we do, we should let everybody know we're taking a break. And it's going to be at least 2 weeks. Although if there's something huge happens, we might do a quickie emergency podcast. But we want to say thanks on behalf of Jeff and myself and Amal and all of us at Sportsnet for all of you who still downloaded the pod and listened to all of our episodes since March when there was no hockey being played.
Yeah,
we learned and we were reminded that we've got a lot of really loyal listeners, and we just want to say we don't take that for granted and we really appreciate your interest.
You know what? And I've also learned that, and this is through tweets and DMs and texts, generally, the people that listen to this podcast, Elliot, are way more interesting and intelligent than you and me.
And well, this goes without saying.
You guys prove it every single week here. So we thank you for for the downloads and for lending us your ears as well, whether you're taking us to the taking us out on the road for a run or just into the garage gym or just around the house or just a little reprieve from the kids. Whatever you do with this podcast, we thank you for the downloads. We really appreciate it. We're back in 2 weeks or sooner or later. We're like that local pizza shop, not the chain pizza place, but the local shop that when you order a pizza, they sign off like this. That's going to be $26.95. It'll be there in 30 minutes or it's late. Thanks for listening to 31 Thoughts, the podcast.